This is TWiT.
Let's talk to Dr. Scott. Dr. Scott Wright, you were on a couple of weeks ago, and you're K0MD. And where are you located?
Good evening, Bob. I live in Rochester, Minnesota, and I work at the Mayo Clinic.
Oh, boy. I bet you have stories for us, and we want to get to those. But I also have Dr. Harry. Dr. Harry is an old rock and roll buddy of mine, but we don't want to talk about that tonight. We're here for serious stuff, and we want to hear your take. Harry, you're in Chicago area?
Chicago, right now, Batavia. It's about 50 miles out of Chicago. Still involved with Fermi National Accelerator Lab for Medicine, but originally Chicago at Rush and Cook County Hospital.
All right. Well, we want to hear what you guys know about what's going on. We hear a lot of stuff on the news, but I think you two guys can really nail some things down. So take the podium and the microphone, Scott, and let's hear what's really going on and what we need to be doing.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks again for the invitation to come on Ham Nation. One of the most widely watched shows, not just among ham radio, but on social media. I came on the program a couple of weeks ago to talk about a study that the Food and Drug Administration and the U.S. government had asked the Mayo Clinic to lead on, called the U.S. Convalescent Plasma Study. 2 weeks ago, we were just starting, so to speak. We were trying to find more recovered patients from COVID to donate plasma. And thanks to the publicity from Ham Nation, as well as all of the other media requests and the promotions that have gone on, I'm really delighted to announce tonight that we have enrolled 7,176 patients. And of those 7,176, 3,811 have received transfusion. You can see that we have a lot of hospitals and sites. Those numbers will be updated tomorrow again when we have our leadership call. But we're absolutely delighted at the fact that we can give almost 500 units of convalescent plasma a day through what we call a bioethical framework study that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration organized, and Mayo Clinic is leading with hospitals in every state and in several U.S. territories. So we're really happy this is moving forward. There are no approved medications yet for COVID. Some are promising. But convalescent plasma is one of the oldest treatments, and we hope that it's successful in helping patients recover more quickly and perhaps not needing to go into the intensive care unit or needing to be put on a ventilator. I want to thank everyone who's donated. I know you had Andy Anderson on Ham Nation maybe last week, and he talked about donating, and I want to thank him and all of the hams and their families and friends who have recovered from COVID and donated. And I would just want to ask again tonight that if you have had COVID and you recovered, you're out 14 to 21 days and without symptoms, please consider donating. A unit of your blood can be made into 2 units of plasma that can be given to individuals all across the United States to help them. And the lives you impact may well be those of your own family or your friends or certainly neighbors. We're still deep into the COVID situation. It's still a crisis. I feel like progress is being made, and I think that, you know, we are optimistic that we can get through this, and especially with the help of those who donate plasma.
The situation is, and I want to make it very clear, that anyone that has gone through this horrible time and has had the disease, and they are now, I guess you can call it cured. You're looking for those people because they can help you. What's the reasoning? Is there something very special about their plasma, Scott?
There is. Thanks again for asking about that. Anytime you've had an infectious illness, your body mounts an immune response to kill off the invading organisms. And in the case of COVID, it's a virus similar to the common cold, except it's a lot more virulent and a lot more lethal. And for several months after you've recovered, you have antibodies or proteins in your blood that sit inside the plasma of the blood and provide you immunity against reinfection. Most people have it. Probably 95 to 98% have a plasma immunity. We're able to take the blood, spin off the plasma, and take the the antibodies which provide immunity, and to give it to someone else to basically help their immune system fight COVID more effectively. If you can imagine, it's like a fire, and if you can douse some water on it, you can get it under control. So maybe you can get it cordoned off or completely put out. And that's how the antibodies kind of work. They boost your own immune system's ability to finish off and kill off the COVID and help you recover. And I do appreciate you raising this point, because this is a very dangerous and deadly disease. For the last few weeks, more people have been dying every day of COVID than of cancer or heart disease alone. I think those numbers are going to start to fall soon, but it's still an enormous number of people. And even last weekend's New York Times had a sobering story about the graves in New York City that they're burying the unclaimed and unrecovered bodies in. And this is just a very sad time in American history, but we are resilient as a people and as a nation, and we will get through this. And we're learning a lot in the medical community about how to prevent it, how to quarantine it, how to stop it. And I think when we face it again in the future, we'll be much better prepared to manage it and to get it over with and get it out much quicker.
Well, we're looking forward to a day when you can come on, and we want you to be on as much as you would like to, because you always have good information. But I'm looking for that golden day when you will come on and say, we kind of have it under control, because right now I don't think they have it totally under control. And but the thing is, you're getting there, and you're getting there with the help of people that, if they've had the disease, you need them. So let's do it one more time. Tell them where they need to go, who they need to call if they've had it and they're cured. What do they need to do? Who do they need to call, Scott?
We want you to donate blood through your local blood bank. Could be the American Red Cross for most cities in this country. It could be Vitalant in the western part of the U.S., One Blood in South Florida for sure, America's Blood Companies, and many blood banks, blood centers exist in the New York metropolitan area. The New York Blood Bank is very large. In Minnesota, at Mayo Clinic, as well as in the Twin Cities, we have blood banks. You can find information about where to donate at www.uscovidplasma.org, the website that you've been seeing below me, my picture on the show tonight. And there are links that will help get you there. And we will, you can find a place and you can call them, make an appointment, and come in. So if you're free of COVID symptoms for several weeks, and it's been probably 21 days since you've had the disease, and you're free of symptoms, you're feeling better, you can call and make an appointment and be screened, and they'll screen you again. And if you're disease free, at that time, they will check your blood. If you live in Florida, this is a special case. If you live in Florida, my understanding is that the entire state is now doing antibody testing on all donated blood products. So it's even simpler in Florida. Just donate blood, and the blood that has positive antibodies for COVID will be spun off and given to this project, and the rest of it will go for the usual blood banks. There's no cost for doing this. There's no charge to the patients for getting the COVID plasma. And Bob, if I could take just a moment and give a special shout out to New Hampshire. We had a situation last week where two patients were critically ill, both on ventilators in the Southern New Hampshire Medical Center. And through the families of those patients and through efforts of our own, we were able to get in touch with the Attorney General and Governor of New Hampshire. The governor issued an executive order staying one of the state laws which prevented patients who were on ventilators and others from being able to sign research forms. So their families were able to enroll them, and we've heard that one of those for sure was able to come off the ventilator. Don't know if it was related to the plasma. We hope so. But what's more important is they got well, and the family was very happy. And so I want to have a special thank you tonight to Governor Sununu and his attorney general. I forget his name, but those of you in New Hampshire will know who I'm speaking about, for the work they did and for all the doctors and nurses at the Southern Regional Medical Center in Nashua, New Hampshire.
Man, that's always good. Always good stuff. Well, let's listen to see what Harry has for us tonight. Harry, you want to give us a little take on what's going on in Northern Illinois?
Not a problem. One, I want to commend what Mayo is doing. I mean, that business of looking at the antigen antibodies is and collecting the plasma from patients that have recovered maybe the, I hate to use this cliche because it's starting to sound like one, a game changer, but it offers a lot to be said. Illinois has had, particularly the Cook County area, which is where metropolitan Chicago is, an enormous number of first responders, police officers, an inordinate statistical number of people becoming infected. It almost follows what we saw back in the late 70s when we saw HIV as a epidemic in the United States originally, and we're seeing some of that, although it's a completely different type of virus. But it is causing a lot of havoc. Rush is one of the few hospitals in the United States that was built where there is one entire floor set up for warfare, chemical warfare, and biological agents. So there's a lot of teams working in that. But we have seen a lot of people having runs. If Scott, if I could call you Scott, said, you know, there's a hope with the Z-Pak, as we've heard, or say something like Cipro, we'd see a run on that. So there's a lot of misapprehension with some of the patients that we see that are doing ridiculous things. Case in point, I've seen a patient that injected Lysol. Not a good thing, you know, not the way to go to take care of this virus. From the HIV land, though, as another avenue that we're looking at attacking the virus, is working tightly with some of the firms like Abbott, Gilead, and so on antiretroviral therapy, which it kind of gets a little bit deep to go into it. But if we've looked at a cohort of patients, a lot of them that did not, let's say we're on good management of HIV, and they're not showing the same size with the COVID-19 the same way that we would expect. So that tells us that the odds of using an antiretroviral medication, just think of it as another type of pill to attack the virus, may offer some other help. So a lot of these, the one thing I think both Scott would say and I would say is we're not being impeded as in a lot of cases. We took an oath that says do no harm. So that's the first thing we want to really do no harm to a patient. But on the other side of the coin, if we do have someone that's in desperate need and there is this last-ditch effort, if we want to call it that, then we want to start looking at these other avenues. And they're going to probably show us promise going down the future. It's a matter of just finding the right combination, the right time. And, you know, we used to say, you know, it's 6-6-15 is one of the buzzwords with HIV. It was volume, quantity, and time. What's unique, you could have volume, I'll do this very quickly, volume, quantity, and time of the HIV virus in a cubic centimeter, if you said. And if that patient's under good control and management, the odds of you contracting that if you were exposed, rendering aid to someone like that, is very remote. But take, say, a pinhead, and let's put hepatitis C under to give you an idea. You are almost pretty much guaranteed you may have hep C after getting stuck with that pinhead. So all of these things together make it complicated, but also we have avenues we could go down, much as like Mayo Clinic's doing it. Everybody's looking at different avenues. The worst thing we have, as Tony would say, Tony, Dr. Fauci, is we don't have what we call R-naught in, and we didn't have that from the beginning. And once it got out into the public or community mainstream, the mathematics became very, very difficult to process. So I won't talk too much. I have a tendency of, you know, going on. So I'll slow down there. But go ahead.
It's all just great information, and that's why we have you here. Now, Amanda has been collecting questions for you gentlemen. So, Amanda, it's all yours. What do you have for us?
Well, I actually have some great, fantastic questions. Dr. Harry, my first one is actually for you. Because you, your expertise is in other autoimmune diseases and such, are you extremely worried that funding is going to be taken away from some of those other diseases and everything is going to go towards COVID now and we're going to lose hope on some of our other?
Good question. An excellent question. No. I don't have the crystal ball, of course, and I'm not the man that writes off, you know, the paperwork on that. But as opposed to seeing in past years a decline in NIH, CDC funding, the NIAH, and so on, and I don't know how Scott feels about it, but there were limits, you know, put in a lot of fundamental research. But since we've seen spinoffs, much of what we're doing that's very, very fast in the drug cycle for vaccine design, drug design, has come from HIV and a lot of our cancer therapeutics. The HIV population early on, before we even knew it, we called it HIV, let's say. We ended up having to fast track, or the term is black box term. So it was off-label use of certain medications, which helps. So to answer your question, no, I don't think we're going to see that. I think we may see an enhanced and more emphasis and maybe more residents wanting to study infectious disease, which might be nicer fellows. So I think it's going to increase in a broader spectrum overall.
That's good to hear. I think that this is... Let's try to find a beneficial way out of this, if at all possible.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no question. There isn't an old cliche that they used in the military in trauma. You could, if you have a really bad laceration, just throw dirt on it because it'll stop bleeding one way or the other, which is a very morbid kind of way of looking at something, but you get the drift. I think ID right now, in the issue of biological, whether this was arriving from a man-made issue, altered animal issue to man-made as a weapon, we don't know, you know, who's going to go there. But on the other hand, this does show us, I could tell you everything about the atomic bomb going off and what it'll do, I mean, pretty easily. But a virus like this, and I'm sure Dr. Wright would say, or if it's similar, is we don't know. It is that hidden enemy, and that is a big problem. So,
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Harry. Now, Dr. Wright, a couple of questions for you. The first one was about this getting tested for the antibodies in your blood. Will you be informed that you're one of those that is helping with this? I mean, you can only say what you know through the Mayo Clinic, but are people finding out that they're helping, anything like that?
Yes, Amanda, the patients who donate know they're donating for this. I don't know how Florida is going to handle the notification. My hope as a bioethicist as well as a physician is that they will tell the patients their status so that people can be reassured that maybe they've had a minor case of COVID if they didn't know they had it and have recovered. I had a colleague this afternoon from Mayo Clinic tell me that we were on a Zoom call and she is confident she had COVID twice already this year in January and March, and she was tested and her antibodies show she had had it. So a lot of us have had it and maybe didn't realize it. I haven't been tested. Mayo Clinic is working in collaboration with the University of Minnesota and the state government to achieve what our governor calls a moonshot for testing, to try to get hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans tested so people can get back to work and they can be confident about what their experiences were and they can know if they've been exposed or not exposed. I suspect, based on Vice President Pence's remarks yesterday at Mayo Clinic, that we will see lots of antibody testing across the country, and this test will become very, very accessible in the next few months. It's not been easy to get until now, but there are lots of effort, let's say, to roll it out. So yes, and if you have had COVID and had a positive test, and were diagnosed with it, and you've recovered, you can come and donate plasma, and they will use it for this program as long as you tell them that when you sign up to donate.
Okay, well, thank you for that. I have another question. We have a nervous grandpa in the chat room, and this one is cute. KO4AZK says, I just had twins. He had a grandbaby, boy and girl, and he wants to know, can I give him grandpa kisses? He's nervous about that, and that's understandable. Is that recommended yet?
That's a very good question for grandpa. Congratulations to have twins. There's hope that we can have two new ham radio operators in just a few years into the hobby. I would recommend, grandpa, that you talk to their physician or healthcare provider and get advice based upon where you live. The Mayo Clinic really discourages us from giving individual healthcare advice out in questions like this. So I need to honor my employer's wishes and stay employed so I can keep buying my radio equipment to operate when I have time.
Absolutely. Now, another just pretty generalized question was, how long does COVID live on all kinds of different surfaces? Let's say even your radio knobs or this microphone right here next to my mouth. What are we talking? What do we really need to be doing to make sure we're staying safe?
Well, I'll give Harry a chance to answer that as well. But my advice is that you should use some kind of decontamination wipe, a Lysol wipe or something, several times a day on the common things in your home, your bathroom fixtures, your sink. Probably the most common mode of transmission for COVID is now picking it up on one of your hands and putting it in your mouth or in your nose or eyes, if you touch your mouth, nose, or eyes, or as you eat. So it's very important to wash your hands multiple times a day. I won't show you the backs of my hands, but they're very cracked from washing them so often. This is really the only way to really protect yourself. I was doing emergency room work in March when this started, and I washed my hands so much, and I thankfully didn't catch COVID from the patients who were there, I think just because I got lucky and I used precautions. So I do want to thank everyone who's watching, who's practicing social isolation and the distancing. It's working. And I think if you wear a mask when you're out in public, you protect yourself and you protect your neighbors and friends too. So I encourage you to wear a mask as well when you're out in public, at least for the next few months until the rate of the infection really drops off. And Bob, I just want to say I look forward to coming back one day and saying, the cases are so rare now, we're almost ready to forget about it. I hope that's sooner rather than later.
Well, we really appreciate all of your time and your knowledge. And so, Amanda, did you have anything else here before we...
I did. I had two more important questions that I wanted their opinion on. One question. So every state is different. My state, Colorado, is just now starting to open, whereas other states with much higher infection rates are still remaining closed. I just wanted your personal opinions, Dr. Harry. What do you think? Is this a safe time to open up? Should we be going out in public?
Well, you have the real wrong guy for that one. Let me do two things. One, I agree with Dr. Scott. We know for a fact the biophysics comes out quite admirably on my side on this one. We know we could actually have a fomite, meaning you sneeze and it's not protected or so, or you don't put it in your elbow, which sounds kind of funny anyway, can travel as far as 27 feet. Now, typically, we're looking at a range of a typical sneeze of about 6 to 10 feet. We know that the viability tends to be higher on a hard surface. So you always want to look at washing down surfaces. The longest that was studied was 12 hours, which is a long time, and that would affect radio gear, speaking equipment, the more solid-based materials than porous-based materials. So in that case, one of the cheapest things you could do to clear something up would be to use isopropyl alcohol, 90% though, not 70%, that tends to do away with the virus in about 30 seconds. The other flip side would be bleach, and you dilute it 1 to 10, and you're in pretty good shape there, although it may take about 5 minutes. When we scrub for surgery, we want to keep what we use is hexachlorophene or betadine type of materials and we'll keep them on the hands literally longer. Scrubbing is a big ordeal in surgery, but we'll keep it on the hands for a while and then we'll scrub it off. So we're using that methodology. But to go back to opening, there is one mathematically dangerous issue there. If, in fact, we see a variant, and logically there will be some variation or mutation and some changes, particularly in insulting what we would say the protein coats and its inception. So on that side of the coin, if you open and you're wrong, that other potential surge could be very bad, very, very bad. On the other hand, I wasn't trained in economics, so I've learned to not think about it, because if I do, I'll think about other areas of music is taking a hit and all these other things, restaurants and so on. So I think from that standpoint, it's very important. Would I go someplace, I guess, if you asked? No, I wouldn't, let's say, put on a tuxedo and go to a fancy restaurant right now and see everybody 6 feet apart or 10 feet apart. So I think we're not there yet. And until the governors start following the same protocol, then we have a difficult time with the epidemiological materials as putting it together and matching it, which is a lot of stuff I said that probably is for not people don't want to hear. We've seen protests, on both sides of this. So
absolutely. And it's very
Amanda,
true.
I would just like to recommend, if you're out, to be careful. Limit your time out, wear a mask, wash your hands. Even after you get groceries home, wash them off, wash your hands, pick up your mail, pick up packages from the UPS or FedEx delivery people, wash your hands. You don't know what's touched them and what's going on. And just try to stay, 6 to 12 feet away from individuals, especially if they're coughing or smoking or other things where they could pass the COVID out without realizing they might have it. So it's just to protect yourself. And as Harry says, we won't know if it's safe to open until a month or two after when we actually see what happens. I genuinely hope it's safe to open. I, like many of you, would like to be out more. I've enjoyed being home. I've enjoyed being some at the office as well. But it does feel restrictive. And if you're feeling a little cabin fever, if you're feeling a little nervous or upset about it, that's normal. If you're really feeling sick or having a lot of anxiety about being at home or a lot of angst and worry, talk to your physician or other healthcare provider. We also know that if you have health issues, don't neglect or delay going to see the doctor. We genuinely believe that there are a large number of people whose health is being harmed right now out of fear of going to the hospital or to the doctor for care, maintenance and care of their health issues, or for issues that they think that might be urgent, but they're afraid to go in. It's safe to go to the hospital. It's safe to go to your doctor. They will put a mask on you. They will keep you separated. If you're sick, please get health care, because other things, heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, strokes still happen. And so please seek care if it's appropriate.
Dr. Wright. And that brings me to one question that I had, and this is non-COVID related, and I thank you for bringing up other issues you might have. So this is completely ham radio related. K8SAS wanted to know real quick, is there any RF problem to watch out for with someone that has a defibrillator or pacemaker implanted?
Oh, that's a great question. I love that question. Harry may have a question, maybe have an answer as a physicist, but I'm a cardiologist by day. And I tell patients that if you keep a safe distance from your Yagi, that is, if you're working on your Yagi and you're having someone run a kilowatt through it while you're on the tower, you're nuts for doing that, and it's going to interrupt your pacemaker. But almost all devices now are shielded. And if they sense a magnetic field, they don't turn off. The defibrillators don't start shocking you. They go into a default mode. And if you feel yours went into a default mode, you can always call and have it checked. So generally, it's safe to have an RF amplifier in the shack and to run HF equipment. But just do practice good bonding and grounding techniques and don't do foolish things. And Harry, you're a physicist, I think, as well. Do you want to add to that?
Yes, let's hear it. I agree with everything you're saying. I mean, common sense prevails. And older people, or I shouldn't say older people, older devices were more susceptible, pacemakers and such, to RF fields, particularly in the UHF or higher frequencies. That's not the case. And Dr. Scott's completely, I agree with him. Of course, you know, tuning an antenna and climbing a tower with 1,000 watts going through it was probably not a very prudent idea for multiple avenues. The only other thing I'd say with masks that people put on, even the N95, keep in mind, they're only good for 20 minutes. After 20 minutes, you've saturated the mask with your respiratory in-out materials, we'll just say. So you better have another mask to switch over. In the operating room, if I'm doing something, someone will come behind me and we'll swap masks out. Mm-hmm. So that's a very touchy subject. But your own inhalation, exhalation, you know, back and forth breathing, and that could make the mask less useful, less protective, depending on the design and that. So...
All of these questions have been great. Amanda, is that the bottom of your list?
That was about it. I was going to ask about high altitude because, you know, I'm in Colorado and I care if we suffer more in high altitude, but that was it. You guys did awesome. Thanks, Docs, for being on. This has been great, and our chat room's going crazy.
One thing I want to add is we have a very good friend of ours down in the Springfield area, and he's quite a guy and does a lot of international lectures and stuff. And he was telling us that if you do have a mask, that you should bake it for about an hour at like 160 degrees. Scott, is that true? Do you agree with that?
I don't agree with that. It's not that I don't know that he's wrong. It's just I don't have anyone at work telling me to do that or advising that. And I think that could cause damage to the composite material in the mask. And I just want to put a pitch in for field day. I know the ARRL has not taken a position yet, but I'm genuinely worried about field day. I'm afraid if we get a lot of hams together who are older in age and heavier in size, we may see some of our fellow hams get exposed to COVID and be seriously ill. So talk to your ARRL representatives. And I think we need to really impose social distancing at field day until we know it's safe. We don't want to lose one ham unnecessarily from a tower accident or COVID. We have to stay together on this.
Absolutely. Well, I really appreciate you being here. We need to move on a little bit, but we're going to have you back on and see how things are going, both of your hospitals and offices. But so many thanks to being here, giving us the real scoop. And we'll be back to you soon. And be sure and call us if you have anything at all you can add to the situation. You know, you have an open line here, and we'll be here for you. So thank you very much for being on Ham Nation tonight.
Thanks a lot, Tom. If I can make a quick comment, there is the MarcoNet, too, that is on Sundays at 14342 that we cannot diagnose, but there is deans and professional physicians from all over the United States, and this has been the major topic. Plus a COVID net that is on Wednesday evenings on 7.222. So we're trying to help disseminate not news material, but fact as opposed to fiction.